Das kann so sein, dass ich bin so schlank, wenn wir wieder mit der Sache zu bis darf Kuf Gimel. Sagt die Mission, if a widow says she does not want to leave the house that she lived in with her husband, the Yerushim can't tell her to leave and they'll support her in her father's house. Rather, they must allow her to stay in the house, support her there, and give her accommodations befitting her status. If she says she wants to live in her father's house, they can tell her, if you live with us in your husband's house, we'll support you. But if you live by your father's house, we will not support you. If she says that she doesn't want to live with them because she's young and the Yerushim are young, and it would be improper for them to live together, she can go live in her father's house and she has to be supported there. Zakhtamar Abraisa says she's entitled to live in the house as she did during her husband's lifetime. She gets the servants like she did then, she gets the bedding like she did then, she gets the use of the silver and gold utensils as she did then. This is based on the ksubim, which the husband writes, you can live in my house for as long as you're a widow. My house means to live the way you lived while I was there. Rabbi Yosef told Abraisa that the words my house also teach that if the husband had very cramped living quarters, she's not entitled to remain there. Rav Nachman said if the Yerushim sell the house while the widow is living there, the sale is ineffective. Frankly, why is it different than the case of where a small estate which is supposed to be given to the daughters more than the sons, if that's sold by the sons, in which case Rav Asi in the name of Yechanan said that the sale would be effective, the hakam over here it's ineffective. The more explains that the daughters did not have the estate pledged to them during the father's lifetime. The widow did have these rights during his lifetime. Abaye said we have a tradition that if the house collapsed, the Yerushim would not be obligated to rebuild it for her to live in. Abraisa says this as well and then adds that even if the widow wants to rebuild it with her own funds, we do not listen to her. Abaye asks, what if she repairs the house and prevents it from collapsing? Is she allowed to remain living there? Take Ublev Dashaila. The Mishnah said, Umra Efshi, why don't we make them support her if she lives in her father's house? Mara says this is based on the concept of Rahuna, that more people in the house bring more bracha to the house based on more mazel and less expenses per person. Mara, why don't we make them support her and just allow them to decrease the amount by the amount that they would have saved if she would have been living with them? Mara says that's actually what the Mishnah means. Rahuna said, when the Chum teaches halachas, we often find other teachings regarding bracha, wealth, and healing in the statements as well. We've just shown how our Mishnah, in our Mishnah's halacha, that it teaches that the bracha increase with the number of people in the house. We also find when we're teaching regarding the halachas of kinyan, they teach how a kinyan should be made to help one attain and keep his wealth. Also, when teaching regarding the halachas of chametz, they teach that chewed up grain has healing benefit when placed onto a wound. Abraisa says at the time of Rebbe's death, he asked for his sons. He told them, number one, be careful to honor your mother. The Gemara explains this is referring to his wife, not their mother. And although the obligation to honor a father's wife is deraisa, that's only during the father's lifetime. Number two, he told them, make sure that my lamp remains lit and that my table and bed remain set. Because after his death, the Gemara explains, Rebbe would return to make kiddush for his family every Friday night and continue to do so until someone outside the family found out about it. At that point, it stopped so as not to make it look like other tzaddikim were not as great as he was. And number three, he told them, Yosef of Haifa and Shimon from Ephraim served me during my life and should do so after my death. The Gemara explains that they died when Rebbe died, and he wanted the people to realize that they died not because they were in any way bad, but rather that they can be able to continue serving him in Olam Haba. The Braisa continues, Rebbe then said to he asked for the Rabban, and he told him, number one, don't make a spadim for me in the small cities. He wanted it to be larger, centralized spadim, which would serve to increase the honor of the Torah. Number two, he told them, make sure to resume the yeshiva learning after 30 days of my death, meaning stop the spadim and return to learning. The Gemara says that Rebbe felt it would be wrong to make a spadim for longer than that because 30 days was the amount of time that they mourned for Moshe Rabbeinu. After 30 days of Rebbe's death, they continued making a spadim either by day or by night and learned by the other time. And they returned to a full learning schedule not until after 12 months after his death. Number three, he told the Rabbanon, my son Shimon is wise, my son Gamliel should be the Nasi, and Chanina Bar Chomo should become the Rosh Hashiva. The Gemara says the day Rebbe died, Abasko went out and said that whoever was there with Rebbe at the funeral and at the Hespedim is prepared, is mukhan to go into Olam Haba. There was a launderer who would visit Rebbe every day but happened not to be there on that day of Rebbe's death. When he heard of this Abasko, he went up and threw himself off of a roof. Abasko went out and said that this person is also prepared for Olam Haba. When Rebbe said his son Shimon is wise, he meant to say that although he is the wisest of the sons, still his son Gamliel should become Nasi because he is the oldest. For although he was not the wisest Gamliel, still he had the most fear of sin, and that's the characteristic that's of utmost importance in the position of power. Although Rebbe said that Reb Chanina Bar Chomo should become Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Chanina Bar Chomo refused to take that position because he felt it would be disrespectful to take it over of office who was older than he was. Reb Chanina would therefore learn outside the Beis Medrash, and Levi would learn with him over there. When Reb Office died, Reb Chanina Bar Chomo then took over as Rosh Yeshiva, and Levi went above Chavah to go learn over there. In fact, why didn't Rebbe appoint Reb Chiya to become Rosh Yeshiva instead of Reb Chanina bar Chama, since he was greater? Gemara says Reb Chiya actually died before Rebbe. In fact, we find that Reb Chiya said that he cried over Rebbe's death and made comments with respect to Rebbe's death. Gemara says we have to say that it was Rebbe who cried and made comments over Reb Chiya's death. In fact, we find that Reb Chiya had a conversation with Rebbe when Rebbe was on his deathbed. Gemara says either we can say that it was Reb Chiya who was on his deathbed and not Rebbe, or we can say that although Reb Chiya was around, because he was so great in his performance of mitzvahs, Rebbe did not want to burden him with leadership role that would take him away from doing his mitzvahs. We try to find stories of how great and detailed Reb Chiya was in the performance of the mitzvahs, and how, with what great esteem Rebbe held his performance of mitzvahs. The Braisa continues that Rebbe then called for his younger son Rav Shimon and taught him the keys to wisdom. He called for his older son Gamliel and taught him the keys to leadership. He told him to surround himself with exalted people and to cast fear upon the Talmidim. Although we find that even kings should show respect for Talmid Chacham, that's only in private. In the public's eye, he has to cast fear onto others. The Braisa says Rebbe died in Sipari and was taken to be buried in Beis Sha'arim. The Gemara says he used to live in Beis Sha'arim. When he got sick, he went to Sipari because the air was fresher there, and he ended up dying over there.